Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's no secret that I love podcasting. It's an absolute joy to create, and it's kind of become a way of life for me. Since becoming a podcaster, my internal healing has been huge. And when you start to feel good on the inside, you also start to feel good on the outside too. But then beginning a podcast can be a little bit daunting. And one of the big decisions you've got to make is choosing which platform to use to distribute your amazing new show, which you're dreaming up right now. I chose Zencastr. Podcasters can seamlessly record, produce and publish. Log in using your browser and start recording high quality podcasts right away, and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you will always have your recording in the highest quality, even if the connection is poor and unstable. You can create your podcast and distribute to Spotify, Apple Podcasts and all other major platforms. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use the official Bellwitch podcast offer code, which is Bellwitch, Bellwitch. You'll get 30% off your first month. Being a creator has never been easier.
Darkcast Network, bringing our indie podcasts out of the shadows.
The long-awaited solitary witch episode. I feel like these are so hard to cram into my busy life at the moment. PTA life is really, really intense, and I've pretty much started to sleep at school in the little cupboard under the stairs that's full to the brim of PTA stuff for various festive events. But the last one we did, I wore a very fetching elf outfit. The whole get-up, including hat, ears, curly elf shoes and all that jazz. I just needed some bells, really, to walk around so you could hear me coming. So just take a moment to appreciate your witchy swales, all dressed up like an elf, looking fantastically weird. Oh, so festive, though. So festive. That's definitely content material for the old witchy TikTok channel there, and it was a right stress and it caused loads of controversy, but the kids loved it, and that is all that matters. Anywho, enough about my parenting shenanigans. This is the last official episode from the Bellwitch podcast of the year 2024. This year has been absolutely wild, hasn't it? And I am glad it's managing to bugger off. It has been a really big vibes year, whether that be good vibes or bad vibes or a mixture of both vibes. It has been huge. It's not been a delicate year by anybody's stretch of imagination. And it is, of course, the year of the dragon. It has been such a fiery year. It has really reflected dragon in energies. And so I thought I should totally do an episode all about the mythology and the witchcraft elements relating to the mighty dragon, and then finishing off with a little dragon spell, because I realise I haven't done a little spell for such a long time. Enjoy, and let's get our dragons on. Rah! From ancient lore to modern magical practices, dragons have always enchanted our imaginations and inspired countless books, rituals, novels, films, writings, art, it's all over. And what's very interesting is all the nations historically have dragons in their ancient texts. Before we could talk to each other on different continents, these peoples of their lands all knew what a dragon was. Bloody love that. So what made me decide to have a look at dragons then? I do actually quite love dragons. I mean, don't we all? When you think about dragons from pop culture, especially Disney dragons, I mean, there's been some really, really banging dragons, aren't there? There's Pete's dragon. I absolutely love Elliot, and he's such a gorgeous, friendly dragon. So comical in his little shy ways. Oh, he's so cute, though. Dragonheart is another one, like the last remaining dragon, befriending member of the human race. I think they used to have a dragon film. I can't remember what it was called, if anybody knows it, where it was like a boy and a dragon. And then they captured the dragon and they put it into a theme park, a big castle. They were making it perform and stuff. Oh, gosh, it's a really old memory. It's like a videotape that I had. I cannot remember what this dragon film is called, and I've been Googling it. I just can't find it. So if you do recognise it, slide into my DMs and let me know. But it was very puppeteered of the times, like maybe early 90s. We got Toothless, we got Smaug. We got Spiral the Dragon. I don't know much about that because I'm not a gamer. And then, of course, we have the beautiful Wish Dragon from Neverending Story. God, I'm such a millennial, I tell you. Falcor. And I think his name is a little bit of a nod to a famous Nordic dragon called Fafnir, I think it is, which I will tell you about later on in this episode, so stay tuned. I have to talk about the dragon from Sleeping Beauty, the big, beautiful black and purple dragon that is, in fact, Maleficent, that has changed into her dragon self and is owning the place. She's a proper badass. And then she does, of course, get slain by the prince. Boo! And I think the Maleficent dragon is inspired by that old fable, George and the Dragon, slaying the dragon, which is a tedious tradition in England, which is done every April, is it, for St. George's Day, George and the Dragon. So I'm going to do a bit of a Yorkshire version, like a summary of this story. There was this Christian dude going around on his horse, a saint, and this hermit guy said, oh, there's a dragon tormenting our village. We gave it all of the food and we gave it all of the cattle. We gave it all the gold and it kept coming back to eat us. Then we sent an army after it and the army got scared. And so the king thought the only way to appease this dragon was to sacrifice his only daughter, the princess, to this hungry, angry dragon. Of course it was. Yeah, makes complete sense. Not.
Boo, patriarchy.
Anyway, George, of course, was appalled by the idea and the greed of the dragon, not the king, giving his daughter for dragon food, and went over and saved the damsel in distress and slaying the evil dragon like a big hero. Becoming a saint. Bit boring. Because dragons have connections to reptiles and snakes, historically, they can be sometimes portrayed as quite, well, I'm going to say scaly, but sly and not to be trusted. And sometimes they're portrayed as guardians or guards of treasure and gold and silver and all that. I quite like the protective element of the dragon. And also, I think they can represent greed in mythology as a metaphor. This reminds me of the dragon from The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Is it the second book where one of the kids got turned into a dragon because he was so greedy? The youngest one, what was he called? Philip? Edmund, it was the youngest one. Get it right, it's Wales. And he ends up being trapped by the gold that he wanted so badly and has to learn not to care to turn back into a boy. You know, I do a little mini episode over on the old Patreon. What the TikTok? And I discovered a TikTok that was talking about dragons versus dinosaurs. So it was suggesting that dinosaurs are in fact dragons, and we've been mistaught all this stuff about dragons and dinosaurs. And the more I listened to it, the more it made sense. For example, the T-Rex, the mighty Tyrannosaurus Rex. Don't worry, I won't roar again. Unless, of course, you want me to. I mean, just take a look at him with his big stature frame and his long tail and his big head full of mighty jaw and teeth. And then he's got these, like, little piddly arms that don't quite match his entire T-Rex body. It's just strange. But consider this. Are they wings? Dragon wing entry points, I guess. I don't know. You know, like, bat wings have tiny little claws within the wings. That is just amazing to me. Because it's kind of like, is a clown with his tiny little hands. So that's the first point. And I'm sure it's not very serious. I'm sure there's people who study bones and dig them up and stuff. I'm pretty sure they would have figured that out by now. So that's more like a little jokey one. But I think this second point is very, very controversial. Also quite compelling at the same time and kind of wins me over. The Chinese Wheel of the Years has a dragon within that wheel, and this is the year we've just had, the year of the dragon. Every single animal is actually legit animal. You know, we've got snakes, we've got oxes, we've got rats, we've got rabbits, you know, and then we've got a dragon. Dragon apparently is the only mystical, mythical animal on the wheel in the Chinese New Year. Oh, this is an interesting little pub fact for you. During China's Cultural Revolution, there was an attempt to replace the dragon in the wheel with the giant panda. However, the movement was very short-lived. Oh my God, yes, keep that dragon in that wheel. Isn't it interesting that the next animal after the dragon is actually the snake? 2025 is the year of the snake, which I just love. And the next year of the dragon will be in 2036, so quite a long time away. So the Wheel of the Year has animals and a dragon, one dragon, and everything else is a real animal. How about maybe there were actual dragons once, a long, long time ago, and in the medieval period, people wrote about dragons often, and how they were used in lore and spells and recipes, like there were dragon recipes written down. How about they ended up killing them and ultimately they became extinct, just like the dodo did? And it's like hidden history. And there is just something about a dragon that I kind of can't quite agree that it's a mythical animal. Dragons are not just the creatures of fantasies, it may seem, because they're deeply woven into the fabric of various mythologies and cultures all around the globe, particularly in the East, like China, symbolising power, strength and good fortune. They're often seen as a water deity, controlling the rain and the rivers, and are celebrated during festivals like the Dragon Boat Festivals and Fire Festivals. I mean, when you think of China, you do absolutely think of a big gold dragon with big googly eyes and a lot of people inside it dancing with it so beautifully. Yes, dragons over there are seen as incredibly lucky and fantastically good-fortuned. In contrast, in the Western world, mythology often portrays dragons as fearsome beasts hoarding treasures and guarding ancient secrets. Think of the legendary dragons like Smaug from Tolkien's The Hobbit, or the fearsome beasts from Tales of King Arthur. And this is also influenced from George and the Dragon. In these stories, dragons often represent both danger and greed and the potential for transformation. And I think that's got the snake connection as well, because dragons are seen as reptiles because they've got scales and they're probably cold blooded, and we've had this before with the snake episode. Snakes are sly, dragons are connected to snakes, and they both represent the fire element, so there is a lot of little links there. And then also the church taking over and making saints that slay dragons and all that. I'm just saying how it's interesting how this side isn't as pro-dragon as non-Western societies that burnt witches at the stake and all that jazz. It's just an observation from Swales. And now I'm going to tell you a little story because I think this one has quite a big influence on dragons of today. This is the Norse mythology tale of Fafnir, who was once a man, a prince even, the son of a dwarf king, Herdmar. Can't say these words. He was rich and magnificent. He had lots of treasures that he hoarded from envy of the gods themselves. And in one fateful day, Loki, that trickster god that we know quite well, Chu's going to love this, he's probably going to be thinking I'm butchering it. So Loki, the trickster god, killed Herdmar's son, Okra, in a cruel game. And as compensation, the gods filled Okra's skin with gold, a treasure cursed by its previous owner, the dwarf Andvari. This curse promised to ruin anyone who owned it, but greed blinded the family, and Fafnir entered. By the glittering pile of wealth, he grew jealous and betrayed his father in a brutal act. He murdered him and claimed the treasure for himself. His greed consumed him, and he started to guard his treasures from the thieves that kept coming to steal this haunted, terrible treasure. And so he fled to the wilderness of the forests and hid and transformed into a scary, monstrous dragon. His dragon form symbolised his irresistible hunger for gold and his corrupted soul. He breathed poison into the air and terrorised all who approached his lair. Could that be fire or something similar? So years later, a young hero named Sigurd, guided by the wisdom of the one-eyed god Odin, was fated to confront this dragon. But he was no ordinary warrior. He was actually Fanaf's brother and had his own grudges against the dragon. And he was so angry, he forged a big-ass mighty sword named Gram, sharp enough to slice through steel. He wanted revenge against the dragon and also to take the treasure for himself. So Sigurd set out to slay the beast. He dug trenches along the paths that the dragon used to slither to a nearby stream, intending to strike him from below. And as the dragon approached, its massively scary body casting an ominous shadow, Sigurd waited with bated breath. At the perfect moment, he plunged the sword Gram into his soft underbelly, dealing a fatal blow. As the dragon lay dying, he cursed Sigurd, warning that the treasure would bring death and betrayal. Undeterred, he sank the sword further into the dragon's belly, which granted him the ability to understand the language of the birds. Hearing their whispers, he learned of the treachery. All about this cursed treasure, and I think pretty much just killed everybody who wanted it. Although victorious, the cursed treasure lingered, and the hoard would later lead to Sigurd's own downfall in the epic Volsunga saga, spreading its poison to all who claimed it. There you go, that's cheery. And again though, that reminds me of the voyage from the Narnia stories, so that must have been heavily influenced by that story.
Hey, I'm Gina.
And I'm Amber.
And we're here to bring you the Weird True Crime Podcast, where we cover true crime cases that will leave you asking yourself, did that really happen?
We'll dive into questionable cases throughout history that are solved, unsolved, or just plain unbelievable.
We'll also talk about the quirkier side of true crime in episodes we like to call What the F*** Wednesday.
So be sure to subscribe and listen on your favorite podcast service.
Shall we have a look at some other dragons from around the world? How about this famous tale of a dragon in Wawel Hill in Poland? According to this legend, this dragon terrorised the city of, Krakow, is it? Until a clever shoemaker tricked it into eating a sheep stuffed with sulphur. Unfortunately, the dragon, unable to resist the lure of the sheep, consumed it whole, leading to its demise. And this story teaches us about the cunning over brute strength and showcases the theme of good triumphing over evil, an essential element in many witchcraft practices. Another captivating tale comes from ancient Greece, the story of Lardon, the dragon that guarded the golden apples in the garden of Hesperides. Lardon was said to have 100 heads and was ultimately slain by Hercules. Do you know this legend, isn't it? It's in Hercules, Disney's Hercules, where he keeps chopping off heads and Phil goes, how about stop chopping off heads? And then he has hundreds of heads. In this legend, this dragon symbolises obstacles we face in our path to enlightenment. The golden apple represents our goals and inspirations. So again, the dragon is quite a negative being. Right, let me try and find a positive dragon story. Ooh, I quite like this one as a witch. Ryujin is the mighty dragon god of the sea in Japanese folklore. He seems like a very balanced dragon. He can be chaotic or very calm. It kind of mirrors the sea, really. And in stories, he can be both good and bad, can be helpful to the human race, and also destroy them if the mood takes him, and is like a bridge between the gods and the goddesses of higher realms and also mankind, so like the middle dragon. So because his behaviour mirrors the sea, Ryujin's shape-shifting nature mirrors the sea as well, so he can turn into different things. But that represents like duality, where tranquility and chaos coexist together. He's got his own grand coral palace called Ryugujo, and his divine influence touches every creature and current in the oceans. One legend I keep coming across is about how the jellyfish doesn't have any bones. The story tells that once Ryujin wanted to eat a monkey's heart and sent the jellyfish to get him a monkey. The monkey managed to escape from the jellyfish by telling him that he had put his heart in a jar in the forest and offered to go and get it. And when the jellyfish came back and told Ryujin what had happened, Ryujin became so angry that he beat the jellyfish until all its bones were broken. He removed them, so I read. There's always variations in these stories, but this amazing dragon god had loads of insider knowledge about healing human beings and medicine that could help. So they would often come to him for help and give him an offering, and he would supply them with magical pearls and gemstones and materials that would heal and mend human beings. But I know there's a cauldron that he'd give to the humankind that would make endless rice for starving soldiers in one of the wars, which is a pretty cool witchy move there. As Japan is an island, like the water dragon god would have been massively important and influential in their storytelling. How cool is that? I mean, I remember the Magic of the Seas episode and the snakes in mythology episode. There's so much little overlap that appeals to me. The dragon is such a protective creature in those cultures and is really well loved and respected greatly. What makes dragons particularly magical in the realm of witchcraft? Many practitioners believe that dragons embody the powerful element forces. Fire dragons, for instance, are associated with passion, transformation and purification, Water dragons represent intuition, emotion, and healing. Earth dragons symbolize stability, protection, and grounding, while air dragons embody intellect, creativity, and inspiration, and a big-ass piece of clarity. In witchcraft, dragons are seen as powerful totems or spirit guides, helping practitioners to harness these elemental energies. They are often invoked with spells and rituals, providing strength and wisdom. In some traditions, witches create dragon effigies or talismans to connect with these mystical beings and channel their power into their own 3D world. I've got a pet dragon, you know. You probably know this. Dave is a bearded dragon and he's a reptile, but I proper love him and he is such a no-nonsense dragon. And when I got him, he was actually called Smog. And then my daughter said, "Oh, he looks like a Dave." And I thought, he does actually look like a Dave. He's an old grumpy man and he's got a really judgy face. He's absolutely a Dave. Sorry to all the Daves listening out there. But in the role of modern witchcraft, many witches and Wiccan practitioners of the craft invoke the energy of the dragon within to their rituals. They may call upon these majestic beings for our protection, wisdom and guidance. To me personally, it feels like definitely a fire element, and it just seems to be such a strong characteristic and protective at that, a mama dragon. And I was thinking we could incorporate a little dragony spell. So yes, let's go for that now. This is Dragon's Breath Spell. You will need a red candle for fire dragons, a blue candle for water dragons, a green candle for earth dragons, and an orange candle for air dragons. One piece of paper and a pen, and a small bowl of salt. So nothing too fancy. Begin by finding a quiet space where you can work uninterrupted. Set your candles alight, representing the four elements. As you light the red candle first, say, "Fire dragon, I ignite my passion and transformation." Next, light the blue candle, saying, "Water dragon, flow through me with healing and intuition." Light the third green candle, saying, "Earth dragon, ground me in stability and protection." And finally, light the orange candle, saying, "Air dragon, inspire my creativity and intellect." On your piece of paper, write down what you wish to manifest in your life with the help of this dragon energy. Fold the paper and place it in the centre of the circle. Sprinkle some salt over the folded paper as a symbol of purification and protection. Now close your eyes and visualise dragons surrounding you and all their energies flowing freely around you. Imagine their vibrant colours swirling around, filling you with their unique strengths. Take a deep breath and say, "Dragons of power, hear my call. With your magic, I stand tall. Elemental forces, guide my way. In your light, I wish to stay." Sit in this meditative circle for as long as you feel comfortable, allowing the energy of the dragons to envelop you. You may even wish to visualise dragons of your choosing, whether they be fiery red or tranquil blue or sturdy green or a wispy orange, coming forward to share their own wisdoms with you personally. When you feel ready, take a deep breath, open your eyes and extinguish your candles one by one, thinking of each dragon and thanking them for their presence and assistance in your circle. Place your folded paper somewhere special, like on your altar, on your sacred place, to remind you of the energy you've just invoked. Finally, take a moment to express gratitude to them dragons and the elements. You can say a simple phrase like, "Thank you for your guidance and support.
May I carry your magic with me always.
Or just for a few days. After you've completed your spell, I invite you to reflect with the dragon and do some journaling. And I have created a few helpful journal prompts for you to carry on your dragon invoking work into the year of the snake.
What qualities do you most admire about dragons, and how can you embody these traits into your life?
Look around you and see if you can see any images of dragons, any films you own, any mugs, or, you know, what kind of dragon is on there. Do you like how dragons look? There's a reason for that. Nothing is coincidental.
And how can you incorporate the elemental energies of dragons into your daily practice?
Rituals and magic.
Do have a little journal, and if you're willing to share, tag the Bellwitch podcast, separated by underscores, on Instagram. I would love to see what you've journaled and how it looks. I love a journal, me. Remember, the energy of the dragon is always available to you if you seek it. And as we bid farewell to the year of the dragon,
which has taught us so many lessons in resilience, in courage, in loyalty, and in strength,
let us carry the lessons and the magic of these magnificent spiritual creatures,
whether they be of mythology, mystery, or forgotten history. Let's take their power into the new year and celebrate the things to come. Thank you very much for listening to the Bellwitch podcast, Witching in the 21st Century, with me, Swales, the Friendly Green Witch. I'm coming up to 2 years now in March, which is pretty fantastic. It's flown by and I've learned lots. But I'm always looking to evolve, as you know, and I was thinking it'd be awesome if I could invite you on the podcast, listener, with your stories. Let's connect. That perhaps some of you out there could send me an email on the bellwitchpodcast@yahoo.com. Write to me and tell me about your witchy life, your witchy craft, why it's so positive, how it's helped your mental health, and all the positivity. It'd be so awesome to hear from you about this. Why you love it, you know, like positive mental health witchiness, and I can read some stories out as a bit of a bonus episode. It'd be lovely to do this maybe once a month, I was thinking. So do get in contact with me if you've got any insights you'd like to share, any pointers. And in the new year, I will be uploading the very last meditation episode, which is taking a bit of a long time to come about, but I'll be working on it over the festive period. So there you go. So have a fantastic Christmas and a happy new calendar year, and I shall speak to you in January 2025. Stay magical, witches!